fortunate that we're talking about dress codes because, of course, dress codes have been in our news all week, haven't they? Very big topic all week about dress codes. Allow me to please read Jonah chapter 3 before we get started on this, the third in a series of the book of Jonah. The word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it the message that I tell you." So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh, according to the word of the Lord. Now Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, and 3 days' journey in breadth. Jonah began to go into the city, going a day's journey, and he called out, "Yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown." The people of Nineveh believed God. They called for a fast and put on sackcloth, from the greatest of them to the least of them. The word reached the king of Nineveh, and he arose from his throne, removed his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes. And he issued a proclamation and published through Nineveh, "By the decree of the king and his nobles, let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock take anything. Let them not feed or drink water, but let man and beast be covered with sackcloth, and let them call out mightily to God. Let everyone turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. Who knows? God may turn and relent and turn from his fierce anger so that we may not perish." When God saw what they did, how they turned from their evil way, God relented of the disaster that he had said he would do to them, and he did not do it. Does what you wear matter? Big discussion, right? The Senate changed their dress code this week for our distinguished senator from Pennsylvania, and then immediately a lot of hoopla, a lot of stuff going on, and then they changed it back. Does what's on the outside have a deeper meaning about something else? Or is it just outward appearance, it's nobody's business? Well, a lot has been written about that, I'm sure. A lot has been discussed about that. You can find things all over the internet, and everybody has an opinion. The Bible is packed full of stories about garments, about clothing, about what people are wearing, about the meaning of that clothing, used literally and metaphorically. It starts in Genesis, right? Adam and Eve sinned. They were hiding from God. They realized they were naked. And what happened? God made them clothes. And he clothed them. And it goes all the way through the Bible. When we get to the book of Revelation, right, we find those who are wearing white robes that have been washed in the blood of the Lamb. There are garments that are royal. Much detail was given to Moses about the clothing of Aaron. Every piece of clothing meant something. Great detail, the fabric, everything he wore, every item that the high priest wore meant something spiritually. And even now, in our society, it may not be such a big deal, but teens wear uniforms, right? If you're playing for a certain team, you wear a uniform. If you go to a private school or a certain school, they have a uniform. If you see somebody in a lab coat, right, they're probably working in the hospital or in the medical field, or if they have scrubs on. Prisoners have certain clothes that they wear, and people still wear black when they're mourning. Paul, of course, takes all of this and applies a spiritual implication to it in Colossians 3:12 when he says, "Be clothed with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience." Nineveh changes their dress code. Jonah now is finally ready to obey, and he goes there to preach. Now, you remember how he disobeyed the first time. God said, "Go east and go speaking." Jonah decided to go west and go sailing. He went the total opposite direction that the Lord told him. Listen to this quote from Jonathan Edwards. "It has always been the task of every generation to discover in which direction the Sovereign Redeemer is moving and then move in that direction." I'm going to read that to you again, because that's very important. That's important for individuals. It's also important for churches. It's also important for small churches, because sometimes we get in a rut, don't we? Sometimes we just do what we do because they've always done it. So listen to that quote again. "It has always been the task of every generation to discover in which direction the Sovereign Redeemer is moving and then move in that direction." And what happens if you don't? You find yourself in a storm like Jonah. Well, God shows Jonah compassion. And compassion is what the book of Jonah is about. It's the main theme. God's mercy. Mercy to the mariners in chapter 1. Mercy to Jonah in chapter 2. And today in chapter 3, mercy to Nineveh. Nineveh was a great city. The writer tells us three times that Nineveh was a great city. And in chapter 3, he referred to it as an exceedingly great city. It was exceedingly great and it was exceedingly brutal. These were the Assyrians. They were brutal, they were violent. They did things to their enemies that you can't even talk about in public. They were known for violence. And God tells Jonah, one of the few times that a prophet of Israel is told to go somewhere other than the nation of Israel. Usually they go to the nation of Israel. But this is one of the few times where they're told to go to the unbelievers, the pagans, the Gentiles. And so Jonah goes to Nineveh with a message. "Okay, God, I get it. I'm going to go tell them what you want me to tell them." What was the message? Well, let's look at what it wasn't, first of all, right? Surprisingly, Jonah didn't say you need to come into a covenant relationship with God. You need to get circumcised. What? Why not? Don't people who want to become a part of Israel back then, didn't they have to come into the covenant, into the nation? Didn't they, the males have to be circumcised? You need to practice the law. You're going to have to change your diet. Forget the pork and all that other stuff, right? You're going to have to change your diet. None of that. Jonah doesn't even tell them to put away their idols and their gods. Jonah never tells them to come and bring offerings. Every day in the temple there were offerings to God. There was a morning sacrifice and an evening sacrifice. Incense going up continually. Jonah tells them none of that. Now he comes with a very different message. It's a message that would not be popular today. It's a message about repentance, about turning. Turning. And our readings have the same thing in Ezekiel, right? It says, turn. We have to turn. And Jesus tells the parable of the young man who had to change his mind. That's repentance. The Hebrew word shuv is mentioned four times in verses 8 to 10. Turn, turn, turn. "Yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown," Jonah tells these people. And there was certainly more to the sermon, more than that. Jonah said, "Listen, because of the way you're living, and you're such a violent people, and you're doing so much harm to one another and to others, God's wrath is coming. God's wrath is coming." And you know what? Jonah probably loved it. I mean, he probably preached that message smiling, you know? He was thinking, they're going to get it. They're really going to get it. They discern what it's coming to. Well, let's look at what happened in Nineveh. Three things happened in Nineveh. The first thing, as we mentioned, was they changed their clothes. They changed their clothes. Now, we talked about the significance of our clothing, and it was significant in ancient cultures. Significant in other cultures today around the world. What you wear means something. Your status, your station in life. In many countries, women especially cover everything, cover their heads, cover everything. And even here in the U.S., as we discovered this past week, right, in our own nation, what you wear matters. It doesn't matter. So many times in the Old Testament, they would wear sackcloth over and over. They would fast and wear sackcloth. And as I told our young folks here today, it was a symbol of something going on the inside. Something that was going on internally. A change in what you think about yourself. I'm not who I thought I was. You know, I wore these fine garments and the chains and the jewelry and all the flashy stuff and show that I was royalty or show that I was rich or that I was in politics or that I was from this group or that group. But when you put on sackcloth, you're saying, you know what, I'm not who I thought I was. You're changing how you think about yourself. I'm not actually as special as I thought I was. As important as I thought I was. No, you realize your place before a holy God. And so they changed their clothes, even to the cattle. The cattle. Changed their clothes. That's what you think about yourself. The next thing, they changed their place. That's especially what the king did. The king got up, it says, from his throne and sat in ashes. He sat in ashes. You know, the Job did the same thing, right? He sat, he put on sackcloth, and he went and he sat in ashes. And that's what you think about who's in charge. Okay, the first change of clothes, what do you think about yourself? This was about thinking, who's in charge? He got up from his throne, he got rid of those royal kingly robes and the crown and all the jewelry that he had on, and he went and he sat in the very pile of ashes. Because he realized who was really on the throne. Let me ask you this. Who is on the throne in your life? Who's in charge? Who has power? Here was a kingdom that was feared by their neighbors, a great city, great armies, all powerful, and yet the realization that the power belonged to the sovereign God. They changed their place from the throne to the ash pile. Who is in charge? And thirdly, they changed their tune. Ah, what does that mean? They changed their tune. Well, you know, of course, that's an idiom, right? It's raining cats and dogs. We use these in everyday conversation. But let's just hear a real live illustration of it, okay?
Amazing, right?
how can you do that? We change the tune. It's a little shocking, isn't it? It's a little troubling. But it's an idiom for you change your thinking, your attitude, your opinions. The dictionary says, especially when you know, it will bring you an advantage. And so they changed their tune, what they thought about the world, what they thought about themselves, what they thought about who's in charge, and just what they thought about life and how it operates and who's in charge and where did I come from and where am I going. We call that a worldview nowadays. And it's a shocking thing when you change the tune. People notice. Sometimes it's a little fearful. Right? It's a little fearful. But they changed their tune. Jonah preached God's wrath. And they turned. They turned, much to his chagrin. God turned and relented and showed mercy. Now, the people didn't make any deals with God. They didn't say, there was nothing worth that. If I do this, then God won't destroy the city. There was no working it out. The king said, we gotta turn. We've got to change what we're doing. Perhaps God will turn too. Perhaps. But that wasn't part of the deal. The whole city, from top to bottom, repented, turned, changed their clothing, their place, and their tune about life. We ask the questions every day, you're here than I hear them. Why can't we all get along? Why is the country so divided? Why are people so divided? What are we fighting over? Why isn't there unity? Every politician promises he's going to bring them together, bring us together. How do you do that? How do you change society? How do you right the injustice? What do you do for the poor, for the suffering? How do we right the things in society? Questions we ask every day. What happened to Jonah preached the wrath of God? And it unified the whole city, top to bottom, rich to poor. Everybody came together because Jonah preached God's wrath. And it also affected the society. It became a better place to live. People were better to each other. The violence stopped, and all of the horrible things that were going on changed the society.